book of Revelation, not Revelations, Revelation singular of the person of Jesus Christ. Many things about him, but singular revelation. In chapters 4 and 5, we'll have a window into what Jesus has done and will be doing in heaven. In chapters 6 to 18, we look into what he will do through the Antichrist in the earth, bringing unbelievers to himself before second coming. And I love the idea that he's showing us heaven before he shows us earth. And if you think about that, you'll never be able to see the earth correctly until you've seen heaven, until you've seen Jesus, until you can look at life through him. Everything else will seem kind of blurry and confused and doesn't make sense. And so even in this, we're going to have a window into heaven before we look at what will happen to earth. And God is doing salvation, has done, is doing salvation through all of it. So, Revelation chapter 4, verse 1. After these things, this is John, after these things I looked and behold a door standing open in heaven. And the first voice which I heard was like a trumpet speaking with me, saying, come up here, and I will show you things which must take place after this. After these things. Well, what things? Well, after the seven letters to the seven churches, certainly, which were basically all the same. The message was all the same. The message was, get ready and stay ready. That's from Revelation 1:8. It says, Jesus says, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. There is an end. Get ready and stay ready. So this is who is and who was and who is to come, the Almighty, indeed. The first voice which I heard was like that of a trumpet speaking. Trumpets in the Old Testament were used to give direction. Giving direction began by calling God's people into his presence. That's how it was. When they moved in the wilderness, the pillar of cloud by day, the pillar of fire by night, and the people all gathered together, and they moved on following God's presence. He went before them in all of this. This enabled them to follow him to the place he had prepared for them. It was the promised land at that time, and it's the promised life today. Before God calls you to anything, he'll call you to himself. He calls you to be in relationship with him, doing things with him. It's never about, God has made me better, so now I don't need him anymore. I don't go to church anymore because I gave my life to Jesus, and now I don't need to be bothered with all of that. He calls us into relationship. He calls us into times like this to worship him because it's good for our souls. And he loves us. I would dare to say he is so great he even likes us. Wow. And how is it for you and God? Do you like him or are you duty bound because you're afraid he's got a big stick and he'll hit you with it? This time the call was to John. It says, come up here and I will show you things which must take place after this. Come up here above and beyond where you're able to understand. Oh boy, that's a big part of the Christian life, isn't it? That's mostly where we live. To understand what we can't understand, but to be with the one who understands everything, and that makes it all better. Revelation 1:19. Back into the letters for a moment. Revelation 1:19. I may have the 19 and 20. Yes. Write these things which you have seen, and the things which are, and the things which will take place after this. So here we see the book of Revelation divided into, if you will, three time frames. This is like we're talking about eternity. We're talking about the earth, but we're talking about it from the perspective of the one who always was, always is, and always will be. So time is kind of going like this, and that's what makes it seem confusing, but I'll go slow in it, and you'll find out that it's not really confusing. So three time frames. First off, write these things which you have seen, the past. What John had seen in chapter 1 was to glorify Christ. That's why I introduced this book. It's not the book of Revelations, the book of Revelation, revealing Jesus and all that he does in his work in heaven and on the earth. And the things which are, that's the second thing, the present. The thing present to John, seven letters to the seven churches. And the things which will take place after this, the future. The future to John and to us. It's the same thing, only differently. It's really sad when a person, the only thing that changes about them is their clothes. And they just get locked into a certain lifestyle, and they're stuck there. And that's them. And they fail to realize that that doesn't have to be who they are unless they own it. It's just where they are. But because they don't own it, they're stuck there. Nothing ever changes. So, John, back to, pardon me, Revelation 4, verse 2. Revelation 4, verse 2. Immediately I was in the Spirit, and behold, a throne sat in heaven, and one sat on the throne in the Spirit, being divinely enabled to see the things of the Spirit. And the first thing John saw was a throne in heaven. And one sat on the throne, not sitting as an ornament, but as one sitting on the throne, actively governing, actively involved in everything, doing, orchestrating, allowing, in control. This is what he saw. John was not occupied with the throne, but with the one who was sitting on the throne. To loosely quote Jerry Benjamin, what makes heaven heaven is not the place, it's the personal presence of God in the place. Whoa. Every place God goes is beautiful because he's there. Everything is working toward his glory because he's there. Even if it's not beautiful for us, he's there. The presence of God is just that awesome. That amazing, that all-encompassing. So, what makes believers believable? I'll go slow here. What makes believers believable is not simply our position in Christ. It is also the position we give Christ in our lives. That is, as the preeminent one, the predominant one. What place do we give him? I mean, we have a place. Boy, do we have a place. I've gone to prepare a place for you. Salvation, it's wonderful. He's given us this place. He's given us his all. And what place do we give him? And how is that manifested? Can you tell when you show up and when he shows up? And is there a difference to a situation? When we show up in a situation, what is it? What do we look like? What does the situation look like? When we back up and let him show up first, what does that look like? Do you ever back up and rethink something before you open your mouth? Generally it comes out better, doesn't it? It gives God a chance to, whoa, 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 wait a minute, wait a minute. When God speaks to you first, you'll make a whole lot more sense when you speak. And so we need to go slow in that. Predominant to be, I just wrote down a definition here. Dictionary definition and one of my own. Predominant to be superior in strength, influence, or authority. To have controlling power or influence. To prevail. To rule. To have the mastery. To rule over. To overpower. And my own expression, to overshadow. To abide under the shadow of the Almighty, Psalm 91, is to be overshadowed by the predominant preeminence of Christ, who is our life, Colossians 3, 4. To be predominantly overshadowed by the preeminent one, who is our life. stepping down. How are you with stepping down? We like to step up, be known, be seen. How are you with stepping down? How are you in the shadows of Christ? As God overshadows you. That's the beautiful thing. That's the beautiful thing. That's what makes us believable believers, is when people see Jesus. Not us pretending to be like Jesus, but actually, we're not trying to prove anything. We don't have to be anybody. We just love God and are showing that love everywhere we go. Jesus Christ, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. The one who was preeminent with God in the beginning. That is the past. You'll see that in John chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Is prevailing in our lives today, the present. Romans 8, 28. All things work together for good to those who love God. And will prevail in the end when the enemy is cast down, the future. Revelation chapter 12, verses 10 to 11. Wow, I think I want to be there with him, this predominant, prevailing one, this preeminent one. They talk about victorious Christian life. Doesn't mean I'm getting everything. That means I'm living the one who got the victory. I'm living that life, but he's out front. He's the one going first. He's the one who gets the glory because he's the one that can do the job. I'm just the guy with a shovel. I don't know anything. I just pack this here and carry that there and say this at this time and don't say that at that time. And so are you. And we could live like that. Unless we've got an agenda. Or unless low self-esteem is dogging us. And then we'll have to be noticed and congratulated and all that. And then you're not under his shadow. You're out there stealing the glory of his presence. Don't do that. Don't do that. So in Revelation chapter 6 to 18, it appears that Satan and the Antichrist are in control, but God is simply using them to draw more people to Christ. Satan never has the upper hand. It only appears that way when God is using him, using Satan for his purposes. God's purposes. Such was the case with Jesus' temptation in the wilderness and with Job and his family. Such will be the case again when God uses him in the great tribulation to draw many more people to Christ. Revelation 4:3. And he who sat there was like a jasper and a sardis stone in appearance. And there was a rainbow around the throne in appearance like an emerald. So he who sat on the throne was like, what John saw was a picture of Shekinah glory. And I love this part because I thought, Shekinah glory? Well, wait a minute. Light is pure and it doesn't look like those other colored things. But Shekinah glory of God is the shiny light of his own person. Okay, but so why does it look like sardis and like the other one that I have up there, jasper? Why would it look like that? Well, because God is holy, verse 8, we see that in Revelation 4 here. His light is pure. Because of everything else that John was seeing around the throne on which God sat, verses 4 and 5, 24 other thrones, 24 golden crowns, lightning and lamps of fire, the pure light of God was refracted as jasper and sardis. I think this is what the world is seeing when it looks at us. When people see Jesus in our lives, what they're actually seeing is the glory of God in Christ refracted through our brokenness. And it looks a little bit different. Oh, just put that up again, James, for a minute. The stone, yeah. It looks a little bit different in each one of us. It's the same light, though. And it's refracting. He has a plan for you. And it doesn't involve you being glorified. It involves him being glorified. And so as his light comes through you, it will look like this or it will look like that. Denise doesn't look anything like these rocks. When she comes into the door, it's like a bright light. And it's good. It's wonderful. Don't change it. No, it's wonderful. I've been here before you've gotten here with other people. And went, oh, is Denise coming? Yeah, it's Chetra coming. Yeah, I wondered that. And then you come in the door. Denise is here. It's great. So whatever that looks like through you, or quiet wisdom, I see that going on in our board meetings. You need to know that. God working through these people. This way with that one, that way with this one. It's wonderful. So they're seeing God's person refracted through our brokenness, and it gives them hope for their brokenness. Don't paste a smile on your face and I'm a Christian. Are you? You should be. Like, oh, come on. Be real. If you're not broken, a broken person isn't going to come within 40 miles of you. And so I'm not saying you need to get broken. I'm saying you need to be honest about your brokenness. You all look very nice. You're all done up very good here this morning. You are badly broken and deeply busted. And without Jesus, you don't do anything. That's worth remembering. So you're giving the glory to Jesus in all of it. There was a rainbow around the throne in appearance like an emerald. Emeralds, to my discovery, come in all kinds of colors. Every color of the rainbow. And they're highly valued. The rainbow is a sign to us that God keeps His promises. And we should value them highly. And we are about to see His promise kept. Here we go. Romans 4, verse 4. Around the throne, there were 24 thrones. And on the thrones, I saw 24 elders sitting, clothed in white robes, and they had crowns of gold on their heads. Whoa, what is this? Who are these guys? Where did they come from? Interesting enough, the church at Laodicea, if you remember, were counseled to buy white garments from Jesus. Looks like some of them bought into it. Revelation 3:18. The 24 elders were not only clothed in white robes, but they were wearing crowns as well. And how does that work? Where does that come from? The Apostle Paul, James, and Peter all spoke of crowns promised. It's on that. Anybody get a piece of paper? Hang on, take that home with you. Mentions crowns. The one in Revelation 3:10-11, that little church didn't have much strength. Said, don't let anybody take your crown away. So it's not that they earned it, but a crown was given. A crown was given. Revelation 3:10. Let's go back to here. Revelation chapter 3, verse 10. To this little church without much strength. Because you have kept my command to persevere, I also will keep you from the hour of trial which shall come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. Kept from the... We'll look into this more. Keeping God's command here to persevere was not based on works, but in relationship. In relationship to Him. They didn't have much strength. They weren't big on works. It was based on relationship with Him. As Jerry Benjamin would say, our faith in Christ produces faithfulness to Christ. And you can see it there in that church. Their faith in Christ will produce, your faith in Christ will produce faithfulness to Christ. Your faith in yourself will produce, we don't have a good word for that, so we won't bother trying to put one in there, but you know what I'm talking about, don't you? Faith. Yeah. What was that? Corrie ten Boom, we had that slide up here, and there's something about if you look to the world, you'll be anxious. If you look to yourself, you'll be depressed. If you look to Christ, you'll be all right. Something like that. The places where we put our faith. Where do you put your faith? In your fellow man? Risky. Love your fellow man, but don't put faith there. They don't have much to offer you. It's going to help. The leaders of our country? Pray for them, but don't put your faith in them. And for heaven's sakes, don't put your faith in the system that they represent. put our faith in Christ. The last half of verse 10 reveals that this was not just a promise for the believers in the church of Philadelphia, but for the believers throughout the church age. He says, I will also keep you from the hour of trial, which shall come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. This is fascinating. We're going to end here pretty quick, but we're going to get into this next week. This is what Jesus was referring to in Matthew 24, verse 21. For there will be a great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, nor will ever shall be. This is also, you'll find this in Daniel 9, 27. This period would be for 7 years. The keeping from, mentioned by Jesus in Revelation 3:10, is not protection during or keeping through. It's a removal from. It's actually a removal from. Believers are not going to be here during this time. The tribulation period is not designed by God to purify the church. It's designed to make believers out of unbelievers. Imagine yourself in that setting. When the rapture happens, there's cars all over the road because the believers are gone now. Their drivers are gone. Airplanes, their pilots. Chad will be he's just going to leave a whole airplane. Like, Chad, come back! Imagine the chaos in this world at the time of the rapture. Some people think that there'll actually be more people saved during the rapture than there were during the church age. And they could be right. Get ready and stay ready. Are you ready? You don't know. Are you ready? Because you can't get ready anywhere else than in Jesus. You can't be ready anywhere else than in Jesus, in relationship with Jesus. That working, honest, interactive relationship. He loves you. Do you love Him? How does He know that? Do you tell Him that? You should. You should tell Jesus that you love Him. Well, I feel silly. I don't care if you feel silly. You need to tell Jesus that you love Him, if you do. And then you need to prove that you love Him. By following Him through everything.